It's good to be back. It's been a while, 4 months, I think, since we've been here. So there's some new folks here, I know. So I'll just give a brief introduction of myself. My name's Wayne Newmiller, and been a pastor for 30-some years, I guess, already. In Irma for 22 years over two stints, and we still reside in Irma. But I resigned, retired, sort of, from the church there in 2021. When I told them I was being done at the church, I said, I'm not really retiring, I'm refocusing. I just didn't realize how refocused I was going to get. I currently am doing part-time transition work up at Marwane Alliance Church. Filling in once a month, also in Irma United and Irma and Viking United Churches. As we're there without a pastor. I've been coming here for a year and a half, probably almost on average once a month up until October. So, it's been an exciting time for us, an interesting time, and we appreciate you folks here and pleased to be able to come back and always enjoy, especially the prayer time. And as Levi was praying this morning, it just reminded me, God says, you know, don't deny the little children. The prayers of children are so powerful. And it made me emotional because it made me think of my calling into ministry. And when my wife and I went away to consider, was this really what God was calling us to do? Because I was 28 years old. I was farming. My goal was to be the biggest farmer in the area, and at that age I was farming 21 quarters of land and we're well on our way, and yet we all of a sudden felt God calling us in a different direction. And so when our daughter was 4 years old at the time, our son was two, and we told our daughter that this is what we believe God wanted us to do, and that we would go to Regina and go to school and so on. We were living in a mobile home at that time, and as soon as we told her that, she turned and ran down the hallway all the way to the other end of the mobile home to her bedroom. And I don't know how long she was gone, but it seemed like a long time. And Stacy said, well, maybe I should go see her. All of a sudden, we hear thump, 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 and she comes running back, and she says, yep, Jesus says that's okay. That's what we're supposed to do. And so it was okay, and off we went, and here we are. So don't underestimate the power of children's prayers. Well, you've been on a journey here, and I know, I'm sure Dieter, when was here, talked about, you know, change and transition and all of that, but I'm going to talk a little bit about it again this morning, and the fact of the in-between space that you find yourself in as a church. But maybe some of you are in that in-between space in your personal lives too. And the same things apply in our personal land in between and in the life of a church. And that comes about because of change. Change is an event that occurs. In the life of your church family, it was the morning when Clay announced that he was moving. That began a change. That began a journey for you that you really didn't anticipate and really weren't looking forward to. And change has that effect on us. Sometimes change is something that we initiate, and sometimes it's something that is kind of forced upon us from an external way. And most of us think we don't like change, but I want to challenge you a little bit on that, because how many of you here are married or have been married? I'm going to go with this. Now, how many of you went into that kicking and screaming? Now, don't raise your hand if that was the case, because I think most of us went into that with a great deal of excitement and anticipation of, this is a good thing. It's going to alter my life dramatically, but it's a change I'm excited about. Then the same thing applies to when we began families in our married life. I mean, again, life-altering, no question about it. And yet most of us Did that with great excitement and anticipation. Now, sometimes later in that decision, we think, boy, was that a good decision or not? But anyways, that's besides the point, because mostly we go into it with excitement. So not all change is something that we don't look forward to. But some changes are harder in our lives. The change that comes about when we receive a bad diagnosis at the doctor's office, or we lose a spouse, or a spouse walks out on us, or we lose a child, or a child decides to turn away from following God, or whatever it is, some of those changes are hard in our lives. And we can find ourselves on this journey. And that's the journey of transition, because transition is really the emotional journey that comes about in our life because of change that has happened, whether it's a positive change, and one that we initiated, or one that was kind of came upon us by surprise and wasn't what we would like or want. And both of those things require us to go on a journey. A journey that requires for us to grieve that which was in the past. Even good change, even when we get married, there's still a loss of what was before, because we had all sorts of freedom if we wanted to go do this or do that and all the things. We didn't have to consult with anybody else or make, you know, plans. You just went and did it. So there is a grieving of what was. And then there's a place of renewal and readiness for coming to that place of beginning to look forward to what might be. And then that final step of moving into what is going to be our reality in the future. And we gain hope and so on. I could do a whole message on that, but I'm going to kind of today talk about that space in between what was and what will be. And to do that, I invite you to turn with me to the book of Numbers in the Old Testament. We're going to look at the nation of Israel as they've come up out of the land of Egypt and are in the wilderness and are heading towards the promised land. And I should have got a picture of the, you know, Old Testament map, but the land of Egypt, when the Israelites went there in the first place, before they were in slavery, the reason they went there, because there was a famine in their land, and the land of Egypt is a very fertile land all along the Nile River. It's a green place. It's a good place, a very fertile, productive agricultural area. Now, the land that they were going to, the land of Canaan that God had promised them, the promised land, was also a very fertile land, a green land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And the grape clusters were huge and all of these things. But in between Egypt and Canaan, there's a lot of brown stuff, the desert, a lot of desert. And this is the place that they found themselves in, this land between, the land between Egypt and the land of Canaan. Now, of course, by the time they left Egypt, they were already slaves, but they had memories of it. And sometimes that those memories of what was can get shaded when our reality becomes less than what we were hoping for or anticipating, and we can look with longing back on what was. And so this land between, this desert place that we sometimes find ourselves in personally or as a body of a church family, we kind of think, well, it's a land that isn't very hospitable, and it's a land where nothing really grows, or, you know, it can't grow anything. Well, actually, it's quite a fertile land for a number of things, and we're going to look at that this morning. I'm going to begin reading in verse 1 of Numbers 11, and I'm going to read the first 9 verses, and then we'll stop and look at that, and then we'll continue on. So here's what the Word of God says. Now the people complained about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord. And when he heard them, his anger was aroused. Then fire from the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. And when the people cried out to Moses, he prayed to the Lord and the fire died down. So that place was called Taberah, because fire from the Lord had burned among them. And the rabble with them began to crave other food. And again, the Israelites started wailing and said, and this part I have to kind of read in a kind of whiny voice to give it its full effect. But anyways, if only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost, and all the cucumbers and melons and leeks and onions and garlic. But now we have lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna. Manna means, what is it? That's what it means. And this manna, this food from God, is called, what is it? And this is all we've got to eat. We remember all the good stuff back in Egypt. They're kind of conveniently forgetting they were slaves back in Egypt, and their life wasn't all that good, but they had good food. And now all they got is this, what is it, stuff. The manna was like coriander seed and looked like resin. The people went around gathering it and then ground it in a handmill or crushed it in a mortar. They cooked it in a pot or made it into cakes, and it tasted like something made with olive oil. Sounds appetizing, doesn't it? I mean, anyways. And when the dew settled on the camp at night, the manna also came down. So this is 2 years into their journey. And for 2 years, they've been eating this, what is it, this manna, for breakfast, for lunch, for supper. Now, think about that. We get after the Israelites and think, oh, what's the matter with you folks? God's providing this food for you. But think about eating the same thing morning, noon, and night. I'm kind of a, when I find something I like, I stick with it for a long time. And one thing I did that with when I was young, probably in my almost teen years, was pineapple juice. For some reason, I took a liking to pineapple juice. And this is way back in the days when they came in tin cans, pineapple juice. And I went on for this for, I don't know, it was probably 2 years. And all of a sudden, I couldn't stomach it anymore. All I could taste was the tin can thing. And I couldn't touch pineapple juice for years. Now I like it again, but I mean, it was a long time. And anything like that, you know, we think. But this brings us to the first thing that the land between is fertile ground for. The land between is fertile ground for complaint. For complaint. We begin to get focused on what isn't instead of what might yet come to us. And it's the coming to grips with the fact that the fertile ground that we once were at, or that place of God's blessing in our life, or however you want to describe it, is no longer. And that's especially true when the change has a negative impact on our lives, and one that we at least perceive to be a negative impact on our life. You know, that diagnosis, that loss of a loved one, whether it's a spouse or a child or a parent or whatever it is, it brings us to this point of wishing that we could go back to what was. And if we could just get there, back to where we were, everything would be hunky-dory once again, and we'd be in a good place. We'd be back in that fertile land. Because we don't know necessarily what lies ahead. I mean, God had promised them this new place. They'd never seen it. They didn't know what it was like. They didn't know even how far it was away from them yet. They should have actually been there by now, and we'll look at that more later. And so then we can begin to complain and whine. It's sort of like going on a long road trip with your kids in the back seat. Are we there yet? You know, kind of. This is what's happening here. And it's more than that. It's more than just complaining about their circumstances. What begins to happen, and what they're really doing, is they're complaining against God. And they're almost saying to God, we were better off in the land where we were without you. We're better off before we began following you once again. Because part of the reason they're in this desert land, this land between, and for such a long time, is they were in 400 years in the land of Egypt. And for a big chunk of that time, they were in slavery. And they knew more about the gods of Egypt than they did about the God of their father, Abraham, and worshiping and following him. And God had to bring them back to a place of complete trust in him and acknowledging that he was the one who would be their provider and their leader, and he wanted them to follow him completely. And they begin to complain against God. And that's an easy thing for us to happen in our own lives too. God, how could you let this happen? Why did you let my spouse get sick or die? Or why did you allow this to happen in this person's life? Or why did you take our pastor away from us? You could have stopped that. And they began to complain about God and saying, you know what, we were better off back where we were. So it is a fertile ground for complaint, and we need to guard our hearts against that, understanding that God is still with us. He has not deserted us in this land between, and he will provide for us. I appreciated Paige having the Lighthouse song. I'd forgotten that one, so that was really good. Because he is still our light and our strength, and he will go with us. So it's a fertile ground for complaint if we're not careful. And that complaint can be directed towards God. And there's a big difference between directing complaint towards God and coming to God with our complaints and bringing them to him. They were complaining really more about God versus coming and complaining, God, this is where we're at. We need your help. Because the Bible is full of complaints to God about circumstances. And God's all right with that, with us coming and pouring out our hurt and our hearts to him. But he wants us to bring them to him versus complaining about him to others. And that's a huge difference. Second thing that the land between is a fertile ground for is for meltdown in our lives. And here we see Moses. Moses heard the people of every family wailing. They're whining, they're complaining, each at the entrance of his tent. And the Lord became exceedingly angry, and Moses was troubled. And he asked the Lord, "Why have you brought this trouble on your servant? What have I done to displease you? And you put the what have I done to displease you that you put the burden of all these people on me? Did I conceive all these people? Did I give them birth? Why do you tell me to carry them in my arms and as a nurse carries an infant to the land you promised on oath to their forefathers? Where can I get meat for all these people? They keep wailing to me, 'Give us meat to eat.' I cannot carry all these people by myself. The burden is too heavy for me. If this is how you're going to treat me, put me to death right now. If I have found favor in your eyes, and do not let my face turn to my own ruin." In other words, God, if this is the way it's going to be, just kill me now. Get it over with. Put me out of my misery. It reminds me of another prophet. His name was Elijah, who also, after a tremendous victory from God, ran away when he heard that Jezebel was going to kill him, ended up under a broom tree and said the same thing to God, just kill me now, get it over with. Rather than letting her come and kill me, just, God, take me out. It's fertile ground for meltdown, because the pressure of it can come upon us in such a way that we feel like we can't go on. How can I possibly survive in this circumstance with the pain in my heart or the things that are going on? It's too much for me to bear. And we can come to that place where we despair of life even sometimes. And that's a tough thing to deal with. But do you notice the difference here? Moses comes and brings his complaint to God and says, God, I didn't really want this. You're the one that's leading me here. You need to help me here. And I need your input into this situation. Now, his result is question of, God, take me out. God's going to prove that the land between is fertile ground for something else too. And that is, it's fertile ground for God's provision. It's the perfect place for us to see God's hand of provision in our life. You know, Moses was a bit of a reluctant prophet in the end anyway. I mean, he really didn't want this job. He argued with God about taking it and finally gave in a sense. Initially, if you go back and read in Exodus, you know, he wanted to provide peace for the Israelites and all of that, and then he had to flee after he kills the Egyptian soldier. And for 40 years, he was in his own land between. And he came to this place where God came and said, now you're ready to lead my people out, and I will make you a great leader, and you will carry them. But even here in this land between, after all the complaining, all the whining, all those things, Moses has had enough. And you need to remember that Moses, along with all the people, have already seen all the miracles that God has worked bringing them up out of the land of Egypt. From all the plagues that he sent on the land to convince Pharaoh to let them go, to the fact that when they left, the people supplied them with gold and silver and all these animals and everything as they were leaving, because they just wanted to be rid of them because of all the plagues, the last one being the plague of the death of the firstborn in every Egyptian household that didn't have the blood spread across the mantle of their door. They've all seen this, and yet here they were complaining to God about God and complaining that they were better off without God. And Moses says, I've had enough of these people. So they've already seen this, and yet they've failed to acknowledge that God is providing for them. He provided for them water at the pool of Meribah, which was a bitter pool in which, you know, God says to Moses, throw a stick in there, and it became sweet water. Another time they were again complaining about no water. God said to Moses, take your staff, hit this rock. Water gushes out of the rock. God has provided the manna for them to eat out in the desert, and yet they aren't seeing his hand. But God says to Moses, going on here, the Lord said to Moses, bring me 70 of Israel's elders who are known to you as leaders and officials among the people. Have them come to the tent of meeting that they may stand there with you. And I will come down and speak with you there, and I will take of the spirit that is on you and put the spirit on them. And they will help you carry the burden of the people so that you will not have to carry it alone. So God's going to provide for Moses. He's been providing for the people. He's going to provide extra help for Moses. And he says, find 70 men. Bring them before me. I'll take some of the spirit I've placed on you for this calling, and I'll place it on them. And later down in the chapter, he does this. And as he does that, the 70 men prophesy. God has put his spirit upon them. Even some of the leaders that weren't part of that 70 prophesy because God's spirit rested on them too. And God says, here's my provision for you, Moses, my beloved servant. And not only that, he's going to provide for the nation in other ways as well. So the land between often is a time that we can see God's hand of provision. And there are many, many stories, and you probably all have some of your own times where you wondered exactly how you were going to carry on in that land between. And yet God provided for you just at the right time. His grace is sufficient, Paul said. You know, Paul wanted God to remove the thorn in his flesh and prayed for it three times, and yet Jesus said to him, no, I'm not going to remove it, but my grace is sufficient for you. And sometimes that land between lasts a whole lot longer than we want it to. It doesn't always look like we'd like it to.
It's not something we asked for necessarily, and it's not something that we would want. And in our best days, it's not even something we would wish on our enemies. But it is something that God says, I will provide for you in this difficult place, in this desert space, in the land between. And so that's what he does. Next thing that the land between is fertile ground for is God's discipline. Now, God's going to provide meat for them, but here's what it says in verse 18. He says, tell the people, consecrate yourselves in preparation for tomorrow when you will eat meat. The Lord heard you when you wailed. If only we had meat to eat, we were better off in Egypt. Now the Lord will give you meat, and you will eat it. Somebody's in trouble. You will not eat it for just one day, or 2 days, or 5, 10, or 20 days, but for a whole month, until it comes out of your nostrils and you loathe it, because you have rejected the Lord who is among you, and you have wailed before him, saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? Oh, I don't know about you, but when I get sick, I do everything in my power to keep from throwing up. My wife, on the other hand, she gets sick, she wants to throw up and get it over with, and she feels better. But when I throw up, I throw up. And the thought of quail coming out my nose is one that's all too familiar with me, and it hurts, and it feels awful. It's gross, and it's disgusting. Sorry to ruin your lunch. But this is what God's saying to them. You want meat? You're going to get meat. Eat it till you're sick of it. It's kind of a reminder to us to be careful what we ask for sometimes. I've been reading a book on prayer, and the guy talks in there about Garth Brooks' song, you know, some of God's greatest answers or gifts are unanswered prayers, which is a little bit theologically wrong, but I get the point of it. Sometimes we ask for things that aren't necessarily for our benefit or for our best. And God sometimes graciously says no to us. And in this instance, God says, okay, you want meat, you're going to get meat, but you're going to get meat until you're sick of it. And at the end of the chapter, it says these quail come flying in, you know, 3 feet high, and they can, you know, whack them with a tennis racket, and there they are, and they gather up 10 bushels of these things each person. I mean, that's a stack of quail. Probably gets a little rank after a while, and that might be why it's coming out the nose. But anyways, that's a whole nother story. But God says, you're not trusting me. And the reason you're still in the desert is because you're in the school of trust here. And you have to come to that place where you will acknowledge that I am trustworthy. And that I can provide for you what you need, when you need it, and in the right timing. And until you learn that lesson, you're going to stay here. And you're going to receive discipline. And God's discipline always has a redemptive purpose to it. It always has redemption in mind when he disciplines us. And sometimes God inflicts pain for those redemptive reasons, just like sometimes maybe with our children we have to inflict some pain to keep them from greater pain. Like if they go to reach up to a hot pot or stove element or something, if we don't stop them, they're going to have pain. So sometimes for us to grab their hand or give them a little slap on the fingers or whatever and say, don't do that, I've told you before, don't do that. Sometimes God gives us significant pain to head off catastrophic pain in our lives. Sometimes he has to inflict significant pain in our lives to head off catastrophic pain. And he does that in this situation with the Israelites, and he does it time and time and time again. And I'm so thankful that we have a gracious and patient God. In my own life, I can testify to that as well. And he says, I need to inflict this pain on you so that you learn to trust me. And here Moses goes on and says, but here I am among 600,000 men on foot, and you say I'll give them meat to eat for a whole month? Would they have enough if flocks and herds, we slaughtered them all and barbecued them? Would they have enough to, if all the fish in the sea were caught for them? And get this, the Lord answers Moses and says, is the Lord's arm too short to do this? Don't you remember, Moses, all that I did in the land of Egypt? Don't you remember walking through the Red Sea on dry ground and how it crashed in on the Egyptian armies? Don't you remember how I turned the bitter water to sweet water and the water come out of the rock, the manna that's been floating down from heaven every night? Is my arm too short to provide what you need? Even what you want sometimes, even though it might not be a good thing for you. So Moses went out and told the people what the Lord had said. He brought together 70 of their elders and had them stand, and the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke with them, and he took the spirit that was on them, and he put these elders in. But drop down to verse 31. Now when a wind came out of the sea, the Lord drove quail in from the sea, and it brought them down all around there. And all that day and night they gathered and so forth. But verse 33, but while the meat was still between their teeth, and before it could be consumed, the anger of the Lord burned against the people, and he struck them with a severe plague. God sometimes inflicts significant pain to keep us from catastrophic pain. You aren't trusting me. You aren't following my plans and ways for your life. It's a significant place, as fertile ground for discipline, God's discipline in our lives. And that's sometimes a hard truth for us to remember and understand. And not always when bad things happen in our lives is it God's discipline, because we see stories in the scriptures, and even think of the man born blind, and people kept asking who sinned, him or his parents, that he was born blind. And Jesus said, neither. He's just born blind so that God's glory might be seen in and through his life. So we need to be careful with that. When bad things are happening to people, that we don't assume automatically that they've sinned or they're not following God, because that's not always the case. We live in a fallen world. God sends his rain on the just and the unjust, the sunshine on the just and the unjust, and sometimes the crappy stuff happens to the just and the unjust as well, because we are in this broken world and it won't be fully redeemed until Jesus comes again. And then lastly, the land between is fertile ground for transformational growth in our lives if we allow God to do that work in our hearts and in our lives. It's a place where we can come to trust him more fully and completely, even through the midst of pain in our lives and in our circumstances. It's a place where often we learn to really pray, where we learn to come before God and say, God, without your help, I can't get through this. And probably all of you have heard or have experienced God's grace, sustaining grace in those times, and have learned that this land between can come to be a place where God's changed you in more ways than you thought would be possible. You see, when things are going really well in our lives, we can sometimes forget that God is the provider and sustainer of all the gifts. And God warns his people time and time again as they are about to go into the promised land. When you get to that place, and when things are going well, and I bless you with cities you didn't build and wells you didn't dig and vineyards you didn't plan, remember, it's me who gave them to you. It's me who gives you good gifts. Don't forget about me, because it's very easy to do when things are going well in our lives. And yet when things aren't going so well, it's a time where maybe we'll drop to our knees a little more quickly and acknowledge, God, without you, I'm hooped. I need your help. I need your sustaining grace. I need you to work in this situation and help me to see your hand of provision in and through it. Because you have promised that you will never leave me nor forsake me, that you won't leave me in this place forever. And that's where I want us to focus this morning, the encouragement that God never gives up on us. And even though we might feel like it when we're in that land between, and we might be tempted to complain and say, God, I wish I was just back where I used to be. That was a better place. God says, no, no. I have good things in plan for you. I might not resolve all your issues in the here and now, but one day you will be in that place where there's no more pain, there's no more sorrow, there's no more sickness, there's no more dying, there's no more weeping. I have your best interest in mind. And even in the here and now, my grace will be sufficient for you, even though you might not feel like it. Even though you might think, I've deserted you. I have not. And in that, I think in our hearts and in our minds, when we allow complaint or, you know, the hardness of our hearts and saying, God, why have you deserted me, to take root, it can kind of push out trust in our life. And it can kind of push us away from that place of saying, God, I am dependent fully on you. Because complaint will try as hard as it can to evict trust from our life. And complaint also resists very much eviction in our heart. Like we can say, I want you to pick up, and you know, it just kind of moves in. We don't have to invite it. It just kind of moves in on its own. Like, I don't know about you, but it's very natural for me when things are going bad to say, well, it's just like a kid. You don't have to teach a kid to be, you know, a little bit naughty at times. That just comes natural to them. We're fallen. And the same with us. And, you know, as much as you can try and get rid of complaint by thinking, I'm just going to not complain, it resists eviction. And the only way we can evict it is by inviting trust into our lives and saying, God, I want to depend on you, because trust and complaint are incompatible. And trust will always evict complaint if we want it to. And if we ask God to bring it into our hearts and say, I am going to trust you fully in my life, it will evict complaint. Good movement pushes out bad movement in our life. If we move towards God, it will push out that movement away from God that wants us to take us away from him. But bad movement can also push out good movement if we want to hold on to it. And that's where we make a decision. You see, pain, the land between, is also a place where faith can go to die if we let it. Because we have to make that choice. Am I going to get bitter, or am I going to get better by trusting more completely in God? I want to encourage us this morning. Better is much better than bitter. And allowing God to transform our hearts to that place where we trust him fully. And I think we see that in Moses' life throughout this journey and in the life of the Israelites, finally, as they enter into the kingdom of God, where they have come to depend on him. No, they don't always follow perfectly, and neither will we. But God invites us onto a journey of trust with him, that he longs to show us his goodness, his provision, his love for us is beyond measure. Let's pray together. Father, I don't know everyone's story here this morning. I know the church as a whole is on this journey of transition and the land between, and yet we know that you have good things in store. You promise us in your word that you know the plans you have to us to prosper us and not to bring us into places of hardship. And so I pray for that. I pray for the church family, that you would lead them into the new fertile land that you have for them. But I would also pray for individuals who might be in that land between this morning. God, that you would encourage their hearts this morning, that they would be able to come to that place of surrendering, of putting their complete trust in you, of inviting you to remove any hints or desires to be in that place of complaint, to protect them from melting down and giving up and just wanting to be done with things. May we come to remember that you are faithful and that you are the one who provides and gives the giver of good gifts into our lives. May we receive them from your hand with great joy and thanksgiving. And may we learn to trust you day by day in greater ways, allowing you to transform us by the renewing of our minds and hearts so that we become more like Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. We ask these things in his precious name. Amen. Amen.